We're continuing chapter 26 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. By the evening before the second task, Harry felt as though he were trapped in a nightmare. He was fully aware that even if, by some miracle, he managed to find a suitable spell, he'd have a real job mastering it overnight. How could he have let this happen? Why hadn't he gotten to work on the eggs clue sooner? That's a good question. Why had he ever let his mind wander in class? What if a teacher had once mentioned how to breathe underwater? He sat with Hermione and Ron in the library as the sun set outside, tearing feverishly through page after page of spells, hidden from one another by the massive pile of books on the desk in front of each of them. Harry's heart gave a huge leap every time he saw the word water on the page. You know what he should have done?
Look in an index?
Well, there's that too, but they probably don't have indices because they're... But he... So Sirius is out hiding somewhere, right? Certainly Sirius knows plenty about the Muggle world. And he could have gotten a scuba gear.
That's what they were talking about.
Right, but they wanted to Osseo that sucker across the countryside. Why not just have Sirius mail it to him? Right? Sirius could buy one. Surely Sirius has a way of getting some, you know, getting one. Anyways. But more often than not, it was merely take 2 pints of water, 1/2 pound of shredded mandrake leaves, and a newt. I don't reckon it can be done, said Ron flatly from the other side of the table. There's nothing. Closest was that thing to dry up puddles and ponds, that drought charm, but that was no near powerful enough to drain the lake. There must be something, Hermione muttered, moving a candle closer to her. Her eyes were so tired that she was poring over the tiny print of old and forgotten bewitchments and charms, with her nose about 1 inch from the page. They'd never have set a task that was undoable. They have, said Ron. Harry, just go to the lake tomorrow, right? Stick your head in, yell at the merpeople to give back whatever they've nicked, and see if they chuck it out. Best you can do, mate. There has to be a way of doing it, Hermione said crossly. There just has to be. She seemed to be taking the library's lack of useful information on the subject as a personal insult. It had never failed her before. I know what I should have done, said Harry, resting face down on saucy tricks for tricky sorts. I should have learned to become an Agonimagus like Sirius. Yeah, you could have turned into a goldfish anytime you wanted, said Ron. Or a frog, yawned Harry. He was exhausted. It takes years to become an animagus, and then you have to register yourself and everything, said Hermione vaguely, now squinting at the index, oh, there you go, of weird wizarding dilemmas and their solutions. Professor McGonagall told us, remember, you've got to register yourself with the improper use of magic office, what animal you become, and your markings, so you can't abuse it. Hermione, I was joking, said Harry wearily. I know I haven't got a chance of turning into a frog by tomorrow morning. Oh, this is no use, said Hermione, snapping shut weird wizarding dilemmas. Who on earth wants to make their nose hair grow into ringlets? I wouldn't mind, said Fred Weasley's voice. Be a talking point, wouldn't it? Harry, Ron, and Hermione looked up. Fred and George had just emerged from behind some bookshelves. Oh, by the way, I was thinking Fred and George sort of remind me of Dez a little bit. Just the idea that they love telling stories, and they're willing to do ridiculous things just so that they can tell a story about it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
What are you two doing here? Ron asked. Looking for you, said George. McGonagall wants you, Ron, and you, Hermione. Why? Said Hermione, looking surprised. Dunno, she was looking a bit grim, though, said Fred. We're supposed to take you down to our office, said George. Ron and Hermione stared at Harry, who felt his stomach drop. Was Professor McGonagall about to tell Ron and Hermione off? Perhaps she'd noticed how much they were helping him when he ought to be working out how to do the task alone. We'll meet you back up in the common rooms, Hermione told Harry as she got up to go with Ron. Both of them looked very anxious. Bring up as many of these books as you can, okay? Right, said Harry uneasily. By 8 o'clock, Madame Pince had extinguished all the lamps and came to shivvy Harry out of the library.
Shivvy?
That's what it says. Staggering under the weight of as many books as he could carry, Harry returned to the Gryffindor common room, pulled a table to a corner, and continued to search. There was nothing, in Madcap Magic for Wacky Warlords, nothing in A Guide to Medieval Sorcery, not one mention of underwater exploits in An Anthology of 18th Century Charms, or in Dreadful Denizens of the Deep, or Powers You Never Knew You Had, and what to do with them now that you've wised up. Crookshanks crawled into Harry's lap and curled up, purring deeply. The common room emptied slowly around Harry. People kept wishing him luck for the next morning in cheery, confident tones like Hagrid's, all of them apparently convinced that he was about to pull off another stunning performance like the one he had managed in the first task. Harry couldn't answer them. He just nodded, feeling as though there were a golf ball stuck in his throat. By 10 to midnight, he was alone in the room with Crookshanks. He had searched all the remaining books, and Ron and Hermione had not come back. "It's over," he told himself. "You can't do it. You'll just have to go down to the lake in the morning and tell the judges." He imagined himself explaining that he couldn't do the task. He pictured Bagman's look of round-eyed surprise, Karkaroff's satisfied yellow-toothed smile. He could almost hear Fleur de Lacour saying, "I knew it. He's too young. He's only a little boy."
Pretty accurate, actually. That's probably what they would say.
He saw Malfoy flashing his Potter Stinks badges in the front of the crowd, saw Hagrid's crestfallen, disbelieving face. Forgetting that Crookshanks was on his lap, Harry stood up very suddenly. Crookshanks hissed angrily as he landed on the floor, gave Harry a disgusted look, and stalked away with his bottle brush tail in the air. You do that to me sometimes.
What?
What? Give me a disgusted look and stalk away with your tail in the air.
I do.
Occasionally. Such a cute Anyways. Harry was already hurrying up the spiral staircase to his dormitory. He would grab the invisibility cloak and go back to the library. He'd stay there all night if he had to. "Lumos," Harry whispered 15 minutes later as he opened the library door. Wand tip alit. He crept along the bookshelves, pulling down more and more books. Books of hexes and charms, books on mare people and water monsters, books on famous witches and wizards, on magical inventions, on anything that might include one passing reference to underwater survival. He carried them over to a table and then set to work, searching by the narrow beam of his wand, occasionally checking his watch. Really? So why didn't they do that? I mean, if there were still more books to read, you know, better to stay up all night, a week in advance than the night before. The only way he could keep going was to tell himself over and over again, next book, in the next one, in the next one. The mermaid in the painting in the prefect's bathroom was laughing. Harry was bobbing like a cork in bubbly water next to her rock, while she held his firebolt over his head. "Come and get it," she giggled maliciously. "Come on, jump." "I can't," Harry panted, snatching at the firebolt, struggling not to sink. "Give it to me." But she just poked him painfully in the side with the end of his broomstick, laughing at him. "That hurts. Get off. Ouch." "Harry Potter must wake up, sir." "Stop poking me. Dobby must wake Harry Potter, sir. He must wake up." Harry opened his eyes. He was still in the library. The invisibility cloak had slipped off his head as he'd slept. The side of his face was stuck to the pages of Where There's a Wand, There's a Way. Harry straightened up his glasses and blinked in the bright daylight. Harry Potter needs to hurry, squeaked Dobby. The second task starts in 10 minutes, and Harry Potter... 10 minutes? Harry croaked. 10 minutes!
Oh, shit, that sucks.
He looked at down his watch. Dobby was right. It was 9:20. A large dead weight seemed to fall through Harry's chest into his stomach. Hurry, Harry Potter, squeaked Dobby, plucking at Harry's sleeve. You were supposed to be down at the lake with the other champions, sir.
Keep reading.
Okay.
Keep reading.
Okay.
Keep reading.
It's too late, Dobby, said Harry hopelessly. I'm not doing the task. I don't know how. Harry Potter will do the task, squeaked the elf. Dobby knew Harry had not found the right book, so Dobby did it for him. What? Said Harry, but you don't know what the second task is. Dobby knows, sir. Harry Potter has to go into the lake and find his Wheezy. Find my what? And take his Wheezy back from the mer people. What's a Wheezy? Your Wheezy, sir, your Wheezy. Wheezy is who is giving Dobby his sweater. Dobby plucked at the shrunken maroon sweater he was now wearing over his shorts. What? Harry gasped. They've got Ron? The thing Harry Potter will miss most, sir, squeaked Dobby, but an hour passed. The prospect's black, Harry recited, staring horror-struck at the elf. Too late, it's gone, I won't come back. Dobby, what have I got to do? You have to eat this, sir, squeaked the elf, and put his hand in the pocket of his shorts, and drew out a ball of what looked like slimy, grayish-green rat tails. Right before you go in the lake, sir, gillyweed. What's it do? Said Harry, staring at the gillyweed. It will make Harry Potter breathe underwater, sir. Dobby, said Harry frantically, listen, are you sure about this? He couldn't quite forget the last time Dobby had tried to help him. He'd ended up with no bones in his right arm.
That wasn't Dobby's fault.
I don't remember what that was.
That was Gilderoy Lockhart's fault.
Nice. We didn't read that book, did we?
Nope.
We skipped one.
Yep.
That was a bad one.
It's not a bad one.
Well, it's not a good one. That's just
I like bad. It, whatever.
These are much better.
Good.
Dobby is quite sure, sir, said the elf earnestly. Dobby hears things, sir. He's a house elf. He goes all over the castle, and he lights the fires and mops the floors. Dobby heard Professor McGonagall and Professor Moody in the staff room talking about the next task. Dobby cannot let Harry Potter lose his Wheezy. Harry's doubts vanished. Jumping to his feet, he pulled off the invisibility cloak, stuffed it in his bag, grabbed the gillyweed and put it in his pocket, and tore out of the library with... I know. And tore out of the library with Dobby at his heels. Dobby is supposed to be in the kitchen, sir, Dobby squealed as they burst into the corridor. Dobby will be missed. Good luck, Harry Potter, sir. Good luck. See you later, Dobby, Harry shouted as he sprinted along the corridor and down the stairs, three at a time. The entrance hall contained a few last-minute stragglers all leaving the Great Hall after breakfast and heading through the double oak doors to watch the second task. They stared as Harry flashed past, sending Colin and Dennis Creevy flying as he leapt down the stone stairs and out into the bright, chilly grounds. As he pounded down the lawn, he saw that the seats had encircled the dragon's enclosure in November were now ranged out on the opposite bank, rising in stands that were packed to the bursting point and reflected in the lake below. The excited babble of the crowd echoed strangely across the water as Harry ran flat out onto the other side of the lake toward the judges, who were sitting at another gold-draped table at the water's edge. Cedric, Fleur, and Crumb were beside the judges' table, watching Harry sprint toward them. I'm here, Harry panted, skidding to a halt in the mud and accidentally splattering Fleur's robes.
Oh.
Where have you been? Said a bossy, disapproving voice. The task's about to start. Harry looked around. Percy Weasley was sitting at the judge's table. Mr. Crouch had failed to turn up again. Now, Percy, said Ludo Bagman, who was looking intensely relieved to see Harry. Let him catch his breath. Dumbledore smiled at Harry But Karkaroff and Madame Maxime didn't look too pleased to see him. It was obvious from the looks on their faces that they had thought he wasn't going to turn up. Harry bent over, hands on his knees, gasping for breath. He had a stitch in his side that felt as though he had a knife between his ribs, but there was no time to get rid of it. Ludo Bagman was now moving among the champions, spacing them out along the bank at intervals of 10 feet. Harry was on the very end of the line, next to Crumb, who was wearing swimming trunks and holding his wand ready. All right, Harry, Bagman whispered as he moved Harry a few feet away from him. Know what you're going to do? Yeah, Harry panted, massaging his ribs. Bagman gave Harry's shoulder a quick squeeze and returned to the judges' table. He pointed his wand at his throat, as he had done at the World Cup, and said, "Sonorous," and his voice boomed out across the dark water toward the stands. Well, all our champions are ready for the second task, which will start on my whistle. They have precisely an hour to recover what has been taken from them. On the count of three, then. 1, 2, 3. Everybody went, 1, 2, 3.
Everybody went, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, probably. The whistle echoed shrilly in the cold. The stands erupted with cheers and applause. Without looking to see what the other champions were doing, Harry pulled off his shoes and socks, pulled out the gillyweed, stuffed it in his mouth, and waded out into the lake. It was so cold that he felt the skin on his legs searing as though this were fire, not icy water. His sodden robes weighed him down. Why didn't he take his robes?
Only have underwear. Not to be naked.
Yeah. It's going to be colder.
Just.
As he walked in deeper, now the water was over his knees, and his rapidly numbing feet were slipping over silt and flat, slimy stones, whose chewing gillyweed as hard and fast as he could. It felt unpleasantly slimy and rubbery, like the octopus tentacles. Waist deep in the freezing water, he stopped, swallowed, and waited for something to happen. He could hear laughter in the crowd and knew he must look stupid, walking into the lake without showing any sign of magical power. The part of him that was still dry was covered in goose pimples, half immersed in icy water, a cool breeze lifting his hair. Harry started to shiver violently. He avoided looking at the stands. The laughter was becoming louder. There were catcalls and jeers from the Slytherins. Then, quite suddenly, Harry felt as though an invisible pillow had been pressed over his mouth and nose. He tried to draw breath, but it made his head spin. His lungs were empty, and he suddenly felt a piercing pain on either side of his neck. Harry clapped his hands around his throat and felt two large slits just below his ears, flapping in the cold air. He had gills! Without pausing to think, he did the only thing that made sense. He flung himself forward in the water. The first gulp of icy lake water felt like a breath of life. His head stopped spinning. He took another great gulp of water and felt it pass smoothly through his gills, sending oxygen back to his brain. He stretched out his hands in front of him and stared at them. They looked green and ghostly under the water, and they'd become webbed. He twisted around and looked at his bare feet. They had become elongated, and the toes were webbed too. It looked as though he had sprouted flippers. The water didn't feel icy anymore either. On the contrary, it felt pleasantly cool and very light. Harry struck out once more, marveling at how fast and far his flipper-like feet propelled him through the water, and noticing how clearly he could see and how he no longer seemed to need to blink. Surely this would have been mentioned in one of the books they had. So dumb. He had soon swum so far into the lake he could no longer see the bottom. He flipped over and dived into its depths. Silence pressed upon his ears as he soared through a strange, dark, foggy landscape. He could only see 10 feet around him, so that as he sped through the water, new scenes seemed to loom suddenly out of the oncoming darkness. Forests of rippling, tangled black weeds, wide plains of mud littered with dull, glimmering stones. He swam deeper and deeper out into the middle of the lake, his eyes wide, staring through the eerily gray-lit water around him to shadows beyond, where the water became opaque. Small fish flickered past him like silver darts. Once or twice, he thought he saw something moving ahead of him. When he got nearer, he discovered it to be nothing but a large blackened log or a dense clump of weed. There was no sign of any of the other champions, merpeople, Ron, nor, thankfully, the giant squid. Light green weed stretched ahead of him as far as he could see, 2 feet deep, like a meadow of very overgrown grass. Harry was staring unblinkingly ahead of him, trying to discern shapes through the water. And then, without warning, something grabbed hold of his ankle. Harry twisted his body around and saw Grindylow, a small horned water demon, poking out of the weed, its long fingers clutching Harry tightly around the leg, its pointed fangs bared. Harry stuck his webbed hand quickly inside his robes and fumbled for his wand. By the time he had grasped it, two more Grindylows had risen out of the weed, seized handfuls of Harry's robe, and were attempting to drag him down. "Relatio!" Harry shouted, except that no sound came out. A large bubble issued from his mouth and his wand, instead of sending sparks at the Grindylows, pelted them with what seemed to be jets of boiling water. For where it struck them, angry red patches appeared on their green skin. Harry pulled his ankle out of the Grindylow's grip and swam as fast as he could, occasionally sending more jets of hot water over his shoulder at random. Every now and then, he felt one of the Grindylows snatch at his foot again, and he kicked out hard. Finally, he felt his foot connect with a horned skull, and looking back, that must have felt good.
Yeah.
And looking back, he saw the dazed Grindylow floating away, cross-eyed, while its fellows shook their fist at Harry and sank back into the weed. Harry slowed down a little, slipped his wand back into the robes, and looked around, listening again. He turned full circle in the water, and silence pressed harder than ever against his eardrums. He knew he must be even deeper in the lake by now, but nothing was moving but the rippling weed. "How are you getting on?" Harry thought he was having a heart attack. He whipped around and saw Moaning Myrtle floating hazily in front of him, gazing at him through her thick, pearly glasses. "Myrtle!" Harry tried to shout, but once again nothing came out of his mouth but a very large bubble. Moaning Myrtle actually giggled. "You want to try over there?" she said, pointing. "I won't come with you. I don't like them much. They always chase me when I get too close." Harry gave her a thumbs up to show his thanks, and set off once more, careful to swim a bit higher over the weed to avoid any more Grindylows that might be lurking there. He swam on for what felt like 20 minutes. He was passing over vast expanses of black mud now, which swirled murkily as he disturbed the water. Then at last he heard a snatch of haunting mersong. "An hour long you'll have to look and to recover what we took." Harry swam faster, and he saw a large rock emerge out of the muddy waters ahead. It had paintings of merpeople on it. They were carrying spears and chasing what looked like the giant squid. Harry swam on past the rock, following the mersong. "Your time's half gone, so tarry not, lest what you seek stays here to rot." They wouldn't let rot.
Shh.
A cluster of crude stone dwellings, stained with algae, loomed suddenly out of the gloom on all sides. Here and there, at the dark windows, Harry saw faces that bore no resemblance at all to the painting of the mermaid in the prefix bathroom. The merpeople had grayish skin and long, wild, dark green hair. Their eyes were yellow, as were their broken teeth. They wore thick ropes of pebble around their necks. They leered at Harry as he swam past. One or two of them emerged from their caves to watch him better, their powerful silver fish tails beating the water, spears clutched in their hands. Harry sped on, staring around, and soon the dwellings became more numerous. There were gardens of weed around some of them, and he even saw a pet Grindylow tied to a stake outside one door. Merpeople were emerging on all sides now, watching him eagerly, pointing at his webbed hands and gills, talking behind their hands to one another. Harry sped around the corner, and a very strange sight met his eyes. A whole crowd of merpeople was floating in the houses that lined, in front of the houses that lined what looked like a mere version of a village square. A choir of merpeople were singing in the middle, calling the champions toward them. And behind them rose a crude sort of statue, a gigantic merperson, hewn from a boulder. Four people were bound tightly to the tail of the stone merperson. Ron was tied between Hermione and Cho Chang. There was also a girl who looked no older than 8, whose clouds of silvery hair made Harry feel sure that she was Fleur's sister. All four of them appeared to be in very deep sleep. Their heads were lolling around their shoulders, and fine streams of bubbles kept issuing from their mouths. Harry sped toward the hostages, half expecting the merpeople to lower their spears to charge at him, but they did nothing. The ropes of weed tying the hostages to the statue were thick, slimy, and very strong. For a fleeting second, he thought of the knife Sirius had brought him for Christmas, locked in his trunk in the castle a quarter of a mile away. No use to him whatsoever, unless he used the Accio spell. He looked around. Many of the merpeople surrounding them were carrying spears. He swam swiftly toward a 7-foot-tall merman with a long green beard and a choker of shark fangs, and tried to mime a request to borrow the spear. The merman laughed and shook his head. "We do not help," he said in a croaky, harsh voice. "Come on," said Harry fiercely, but only bubbles issued from his mouth. And he tried to pull the spear away from the merman, but the merman yanked back, still shaking his head and laughing. Harry swirled around, staring about. Something sharp, anything. Doesn't he have magic? There were rocks littering the lake bottom. He dived and snatched up a particularly jagged one and returned to the statue. He began to hack at the ropes binding Ron, and after several minutes' hard work, they broke apart. Ron floated, unconscious, a few inches above the lake bottom, drifting a little in the ebb of the water. Harry looked around. There was no sign of any of the other champions. What were they playing at? Why didn't they hurry up? He turned back to Hermione, raised the jagged rock, and began to hack away at her bindings, too. At once, several pairs of strong gray hands seized him. Half a dozen mermen were pulling him away from Hermione, shaking their green-haired heads and laughing. "You can only take your own hostage," one of them said. "Leave the others." "No way," said Harry furiously, but only 2 large bubbles came out. "Your task is to retrieve your own friend. Leave the others." "She's my friend too," Harry yelled, gesturing toward Hermione, an enormous silver bubble emerging soundlessly from his lips. "And I don't want them to die either." Cho's head was on Hermione's shoulder. The small, silver-haired girl was ghostly green and pale. Harry struggled to fight off the merman, but they laughed, harder than ever, holding him back. Would he have time to take Ron to the surface and come back down for Hermione and the others? Would he be able to find them again? He looked down at his watch to see how much time was left, but it had stopped working. And then the merpeople around him pointed excitingly over to his head. Harry looked up and saw Cedric swimming toward them. There was an enormous bubble around his head, which made his features look oddly wide and stretched. "Get lost," he mouthed, looking panic-stricken. "Fleur and Crumb are coming now." Why is he panic-stricken? Feeling enormously relieved, Harry watched Cedric pull a knife out of his pocket and cut Cho free. He pulled her upward and out of sight. Harry looked around, waiting. Where were Fleur and Crumb? Time was getting short. And according to the song, the hostages would be lost after an hour. The merpeople started screeching animatedly. Those who were holding Harry loosened their grip, staring beside them. Harry turned and saw something monstrous cutting through the water toward them. A human body in swimming trunks, with the head of a shark. It was Crumb. He appeared to have transfigured himself, but badly. A shark man swam straight towards Hermione and began snapping and biting at her ropes. The trouble was that Crumb's new teeth were positioned very awkwardly for biting anything smaller than a dolphin. Harry was quite sure that if Crumb wasn't careful, he was going to rip Hermione in half. Darting forward, Harry hit Crumb hard on the shoulder and held up the jagged stone. Crumb seized it and began to cut Hermione free. Within seconds, he had done it. He grabbed Hermione by the waist, and without a backwards glance, he began to rise rapidly with her toward the surface. Now what? Harry thought desperately. If he could be sure that Fleur was coming, but still no sign, there was nothing to be done except... He snatched up the stone, which Crumb had dropped. But the mermen now closed in around Ron and the little girl, shaking their heads at him. Harry pulled out his wand. Get out of the way! Only bubbles flew out of his mouth, but he had the distinct impression that the mermen had understood him, because they suddenly stopped laughing. Their yellowish eyes were fixed on Harry's wand, and they looked scared. There might be a lot more of them than there were of him, but Harry could tell by the looks on their faces that they knew no more magic than the giant squid did. You've got until three, Harry shouted, a great stream of bubbles bursting from him, but he held up three fingers to make sure they got the message. One, he put down a finger. Two, he put down a second one. They scattered. Harry darted forward and began to hack at the ropes binding the small girl to the statue. At last she was free. He seized the little girl around the waist, grabbed the neck of Ron's robes, and kicked off from the bottom. It was very slow work. He no longer could use his webbed hands to propel himself forward. He worked his flippers furiously, but Fleur and Ron's sisters were like potato-filled sacks dragging him back down.
No, it's Ron and Fleur's sister.
Ron and Fleur's sister. What did I say?
Fleur and Ron's sister. Come here.
He fixed his eyes skyward, though he knew he still must be very deep. The water above him was so dark. Merpeople were rising with him. He could see them swirling around him with ease, watching him struggle through the water. Would they pull him back down to the depths when the time was up? Did they perhaps eat humans? Harry's legs were seizing up with the effort to keep swimming. His shoulders were aching horribly with the effort of dragging Ron and the girl. He was drawing breath with extreme difficulty. He could feel pain on the side of his neck again. He was becoming very aware how wet the water was in his mouth. Yet the darkness was definitely thinning now. He could see daylight above him. He kicked hard with his flippers and discovered that they were nothing more than feet. Water was flooding through his mouth and into his lungs. He was starting to feel dizzy, but he knew that light and air were only 10 feet above him. He had to get there. He had to. Harry kicked so hard and fast, it felt like his muscles were screaming in protest. His very brain felt waterlogged. He couldn't breathe. He needed oxygen. Had to keep going. He couldn't stop. And then he felt his head break the surface of the lake.
Yay!
Wonderful, cold, clear air was making his wet face sting. He gulped down, feeling as though he had never breathed properly before, panting. And panting, pulled Ron and the little girl up with him. All around him, wild green-haired heads were emerging out of the water, but they were smiling at him. The crowd in the stands was making a great deal of noise, shouting and screaming. They all seemed to be on their feet, and Harry had the impression they thought Ron and the little girl might be dead, but they were wrong. Both of them opened their eyes. The girl looked scared and confused, but Ron merely expelled a great spout of water, blinked into the bright light, and turned to Harry. Wet this, isn't it? Then he spotted Fleur's sister. What did you bring her up for? Fleur didn't turn up. I couldn't leave her, Harry panted. Harry, you prat, said Ron. You didn't take that song thing seriously, did you? Dumbledore wouldn't have let any of us drown. The song said... It was only to make sure you got back inside the time limit, said Ron. I hope you didn't waste time down there acting a hero. Harry felt both stupid and annoyed. It was all very well for Ron. He'd been asleep. He hadn't felt how eerie it was down in the lake, surrounded by spear-carrying merpeople who looked more than capable of murder. Come on, Harry said shortly. Help me with her. I don't think she can swim very well. They pulled Fleur's sister through the water, back toward the banks, where the judges stood watching, 20 merpeople accompanying them like a guard of honor, singing their horrible, screechy songs. Harry could see Madame Pomfrey fussing over Hermione, Crumb, Cedric, and Cho, all of whom were wrapped in thick blankets. Dumbledore and Ludo Bagman stood beaming at Harry and Ron from the banks as they swam nearer, but Percy, who looked very white and somehow much younger than usual, came splashing out to meet them. Meanwhile, Madame Maxime was trying to restrain Fleur Delacour, who was quite hysterical, fighting tooth and nail to return to the water. Gabrielle, Gabrielle, is she alive? Is she hurt? She's fine, Harry tried to tell her, but he was so exhausted he could hardly talk, let alone shout. Percy seized Ron and was dragging him back to the bank. Get off, Percy, I'm all right. Dumbledore and Bagman were pulling Harry upright. Fleur had broken free of Madame Maxime and was hugging her sister. It was the Grindelwalds. They attacked me. Oh, Gabrielle, I thought... Come here, you, said Madame Pomfrey. She seized Harry and pulled him over to Hermione and the others, wrapped him so tightly in a blanket he felt as though he were in a straitjacket, and forced a measure of very hot potion down his throat. Steam gushed out of his ears. Harry, well done, Hermione cried. You did it. You found out how all by yourself. Well, said Harry. He would have told her about Dobby, but he'd just noticed Karkaroff watching him. He was the only judge who had not left the table, the only judge, not showing signs of pleasure and relief that Harry, Ron, and Fleur's sister had got back safely. Yeah, that's right, said Harry, raising his voice slightly so that Karkaroff could hear him. You have a water beetle in your ear, Hermione, said Crumb. Harry had the impression that her Crumb was drawing her attention back onto himself, perhaps to remind her that he had just rescued her from the lake. But Hermione brushed the beetle impatiently and said, You're well outside the time limit, though, Harry. Did you take ages to find us? No, I found you okay. Harry's feeling of stupidity was growing. Now he was safely out of the water. It seemed perfectly clear that Dumbledore's safety precautions wouldn't have permitted the death of a hostage just because their champion hadn't turned up. Why hadn't he grabbed Ron and gone? He would have been the first back. Cedric and Crumb hadn't wasted time worrying about anyone else. They hadn't taken the Mersong seriously. Dumbledore was crouching at the water's edge, deep in conversation with what seemed to be the chief merperson, a particularly wild and ferocious-looking female. He was making the same sort of screechy noises that the merpeople made when they were down in the water. Finally, he straightened up, turned to his fellow judges, and said, A conference before we give the marks, I think. The judges went into a huddle. I love that he can speak it. Madame Pomfrey had gone to rescue Ron from Percy's clutches. She held him over Harry and the others and gave him a blanket and some pepper-up potion and then went to fetch Fleur and her sister. Fleur had many cuts on her face and her arms and robes were torn, but she didn't seem to care, nor would she allow for Madame Pomfrey to clean them. Look after Gabrielle, she told her, and then she turned to Harry. You saved her, she said breathlessly, even though she was not your hostage. Your hostage. Yeah, said Harry, who was now heartily wishing he'd left all three girls tied to the statue. Fleur bent down and kissed Harry twice on each cheek. He felt his face burn and wouldn't have been surprised if steam was coming out of his ears again. And then said to Ron, And you too, you helped. Yeah, said Ron, looking extremely hopeful. Yeah, a bit. Fleur swooped down on him too and kissed him. Hermione looked simply furious. But just then, Ludo Bagman magically magnified his voice and boomed out beside them, making them all jump and causing the crowd in the stands to go very quiet. Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached our decision. Merchieftainess, here we go. Merchieftainess, Mercus, that's a dumb name, has told us...
It makes sense.
Has told us exactly, even like Marcus, but no, it's a girl.
Like Murky.
Oh, I see. It told us exactly what happened at the bottom of the lake, and that we have therefore decided to award marks out of 50 to each of the champions as followed. Fleur Delacour, as she demonstrated excellent use of the bubble head charm, was attacked... Surely that would have been in the charm book. Was attacked by Grindelwalds as she approached her goal and failed to retrieve her hostage. We award her 25 points. Applause from the stands. I deserve 0, said Fleur throatily, shaking her magnificent head. Cedric Diggory, who also used the bubble head charm... Yeah, if two of them... Okay. Was the first to return in with his hostage, though he returned 1 minute outside the time limit of an hour. Enormous cheers from the Hufflepuffs in the crowd. Harry saw Cho give Cedric a glowing look. We therefore award him 47 points.
What? Okay.
Harry's heart sank. If Cedric had been allowed outside the time limit, he most certainly would have been. Victor Crumb used an incomplete form of transfiguration, which was nonetheless effective, and was second to return with his hostage. We award him 40 points. Karkaroff clapped particularly hard, looking very superior. Harry Potter used gillyweed to great effect, Bagman continued. He returned last and well outside the time limit of an hour. However, the Merchieftainess informs us that Mr. Potter was the first to reach the hostages, and that the delay in his return was due to his own determination to return all of the hostages to safety, not merely his own. Ron and Hermione both gave half-exasperated, half-commiserating looks. Most of the judges... And here, Bagman gave Karkaroff a very nasty look. Feel that this moral fiber and merit... That this shows moral fiber and merits full marks. However... Potter's score is 45 points. Harry's stomach leapt. He was now tying for first place with Cedric. How is he tied for first place? Two more points.
Oh, because he's tying for the overall. Because he got first in the last one. In the last task. And
oh, I see. Yeah.
And, yeah.
Ron and Hermione. So anyways, he was tying for first place with Cedric. Ron and Hermione, caught by surprise, stared at Harry, then laughed and started applauding hard with the rest of the crowd. There you go, Harry, Ron shouted over the noise. You weren't being thick after all. You were showing moral fiber. Yeah, but if he hadn't shown moral fiber, he would have gotten the 50 points.
No.
You don't think so?
No, because Karkaroff isn't giving him fair marks.
Oh, ever.
Ever.
I see, yeah. Fleur was clapping very hard. Why are the coaches the judges, too?
I know.
It's so just. Okay. Fleur was clapping very hard, too, but Crumb didn't look happy at all. Oh, man. I hope Harry gets laid. You know. But Crumb didn't look happy at all. He attempted to engage Hermione in conversation again, but she was too busy cheering Harry to listen. The third and final task will take place at dusk on the 24th of June, continued Bagman. The champions will be notified of what is coming precisely 1 month beforehand. Thank you for all your support of the champions. It was over, Harry thought dazedly, as Madame Pomfrey began herding the champions and hostages back into the castle to get into dry clothes. It was over. He had gotten through it. He didn't have to worry about anything now until June the 24th. Next time he was in Hogsmeade, Harry decided as he walked back up the stone steps into the castle. He's going to buy Dobby a pair of socks for every day of the year.
Aww.
That'd be sweet.
That would be good.
I bet he's not going to do it, though.
I bet he's not either.
That's the end of chapter 26. And next is chapter 27 called Padfoot Returns. I hope you like that, my boo.
I liked it a lot.
Are you feeling better?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to put my arm on it. I don't mean to...
It smells good.
Oh, it smells like sweat.
No, it doesn't. It smells like yummy. Yummy boy.
Yummy boy. You're very cute. You're very sexy. You're so cute. You're so cute. I love you so much, boo. Say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, yeah. Nice set.
Goodnight, Seth.
Goodnight, Kel.
I love you, Jesse.
I love you, Kel. You're so wonderful.
You're so wonderful. Thanks for reading to me.
Of course. Super boo. Good night.